samurai must all make very certain that peasants never have guns, or none of us will be safe. Merchants and peasants will never worry us, Chosen said.
I agree, Yabu added.
And Naga-san, I agree with part of what you say.
Yes, but guns are modern. Soon all battles will be fought with guns.
I agree. It's distasteful. But it's the way of modern war. And then it'll be as it always was. The bravest samurai will always conquer. No, so sorry, but you're wrong, Yabu-sama. What did this cursed barbarian tell us? The essence of their war strategy. He freely admits that all their armies are conscript and mercenary. Eh? Mercenary! No sense of duty to their lords. The soldiers only fight for pay and loot, to rape and to gorge. Didn't he say their armies are peasant armies? That's what guns have brought to their world, and that's what guns will bring to ours. If I had power, I'd take this barbarian's head tonight and outlaw all guns permanently. Is that what your father thinks? Chosen asked too quickly. My father doesn't tell me or anyone what he thinks, as you surely know. I don't speak for my father. No one speaks for him.
Naga replied, angry at allowing himself to be trapped into talking at all.
I was sent here to obey, to listen, and not to talk. I apologize for talking. I would not have spoken unless you asked me. If I have offended you, or you, Yabu-sama, or you, Omi-san, I apologize.
There's no need to apologize. I asked your views, Yabu said. Why should anyone be offended? This is a discussion, eh? Among leaders. You'd outlaw guns?
Yes. I think you'd be wise to keep a very close check on every gun in your domain.
All peasants are forbidden weapons of any kind. My peasants and my people are very well controlled.
Chosen smirked at the slim youth, loathing him.
Interesting ideas you have, Naga-san. But you're mistaken about the peasants. They're nothing to samurai but providers. They're no more threat than a pile of dung.
At the moment,
Naga said, his pride commanding him.
That's why I'd outlaw guns now. You're right, Yabu-san, that a new era requires new methods. But because of what this Anjin-san, this one barbarian, has said, I'd go much further than our present laws. I would issue edicts that anyone other than the samurai found with a gun, or caught trading in guns, would immediately forfeit his life, and that of every member of his family of every generation. Further, I would prohibit the making or importing of guns. I'd prohibit barbarians from wearing them or from bringing them to our shores. Yes, if I had power, which I do not seek and never will, I'd keep barbarians out of our country totally, except for a few priests and one port of trade, which I'd surround with a high fence and trusted warriors. Last, I'd put this foul-minded barbarian, the Anjin-san, to death at once, so that his filthy knowledge will not spread. He's a disease.
Chosen said,
Ah, Naga-san, it must be good to be so young. You know, my master agrees with much of what you said about the barbarians. I've heard him say many times, kick them out, kick them out. Kick their asses away to Nagasaki, and keep them bottled there. You'd kill the Anjin-san, eh? Interesting. My master doesn't like the Anjin-san either. But for him...
He stopped.
Ah, yes. You've a good thought about guns. I can see that clearly. May I tell that to my master? Your idea about new laws?
Of course.
Naga was mollified. And calmer now that he had spoken what had been bottled up from the first day.
You've given this opinion to Lord Toranaga?
Yabu asked.
Lord Toranaga has not asked my opinion. I hope one day he will honor me by asking, as you have done.
Naga replied at once with sincerity, and wondered if any of them detected the lie. Omi said, "As this is a free discussion, sire, I say this barbarian is a treasure. I believe we must learn from the barbarian. We must know about guns and fighting ships, because they know about them. We must know everything they know as soon as they know it. And even now, some of us must begin to learn to think like they do, so that soon we can surpass them." Naga said confidently,
"What could they possibly know, Omi-san? Yes, guns and ships. But what else? How could they destroy us? There's not a samurai among them. Doesn't this Anjin admit openly that even their kings are murderers and religious fanatics? We're millions. They're a handful. We could swamp them with our hands alone."
"This Anjin-san opened my eyes, Naga-san. I've discovered that our land and China isn't the whole world. It's only a very small part. First, I thought the barbarian was just a curiosity. Now I don't. I thank the gods for him. I think he's saved us, and I know we can learn from him. Already he's given us power over the southern barbarians, and over China."
"What?"
"The Taiko failed because their numbers are too great for us, man to man, arrow to arrow, ne? With guns and barbarian skill, we could take Peking."
"With barbarian treachery, Omi-san?"
"With barbarian knowledge, Naga-san, we could take Peking. Whoever takes Peking eventually controls China. And whoever controls China can control the world. We must learn not to be ashamed of taking knowledge from wherever it comes."
"I say we need nothing from outside."
"Without offense, Naga-san, I say we must protect this land of the gods by any means. It's our prime duty to protect the unique divine position we have on Earth. Only this is the land of the gods, ne? Only our emperor is divine. I agree this barbarian should be gagged, but not by death. By permanent isolation here in Anjuru, until we have learned everything he knows."
Jozen scratched thoughtfully.
"My master will be told of your views. I agree the barbarian should be isolated. Also that training should cease at once."
Yabu took a scroll from his sleeve.
"Here is a full report on the experiment for Lord Ishido. When Lord Ishido wishes the training to cease, of course, the training will cease."
Jozen accepted the scroll.
"And Lord Toranaga? What about him?"
His eyes went to Naga. Naga said nothing but stared at the scroll.
Yabu said, "You will be able to ask his opinion directly. He has a similar report. I presume you'll be leaving for Edo tomorrow? Or would you like to witness the training? I hardly need tell you, the men are not yet proficient."
"I would like to see one attack."
"Omi-san, arrange it. You lead it."
"Yes, sir."
Jozen turned to his second in command and gave him the scroll.
"Masumoto, take this to Lord Ishido. You will leave at once."
"Yes, Jozen-san."
Yabu said to Igarashi,
"Provide him with guides to the border and fresh horses."
Igarashi left with the samurai immediately. Jozen stretched and yawned.
"Please excuse me," he said, "but it's all the riding I've done in the last few days. I must thank you for an extraordinary evening, Yabu-sama. Your ideas are far-reaching. And yours, Omi-san. And yours, Naga-san. I'll compliment you to the Lord Toranaga and to my master. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm very tired, and Osaka is a long way off."
"Of course," Yabu said. "How was Osaka?"
"Very good. Remember those bandits, the ones that attacked you by land and sea?"
"Of course."
"We took 450 heads that night. Many were wearing Toranaga uniforms."
"Ronin have no honor. None."
"Some Ronin have,"
Jozen said, smarting from the insult. He lived always with the shame of having once been Ronin.
"Some were even wearing our greys. Not one escaped. They all died.
And Buntaro-san?
No, he...
Jozen stopped. The no had slipped out, but now that he had said it, he did not mind.
No, we don't know for certain. No one collected his head. You've heard nothing about him?
No, Naga said.
Perhaps he was captured. Perhaps they just cut him into pieces and scattered him. My master would like to know when you have news. All's very good now at Osaka. Preparations for the meeting go forward. There'll be lavish entertainments to celebrate the new era. And, of course, to honor all the daimyos. And Lord Toda Hiramatsu?
Naga asked politely.
Old Iron Fist's as strong and gruff as ever.
He's still there?
No. He left with all your father's men a few days before I did.
And my father's household?
I heard that the Lady Kiritsubo and the Lady Sazuko asked to stay with my master. A doctor advised the lady to rest for a month. Her health, you know. He thought the journey would not be good for the expected child.
To Yabu, he added,
she fell down the night you left, didn't she?
Yes.
There's nothing serious, I hope, Naga asked, very concerned.
No, Naga-san, nothing serious,
Jozen said. Then again to Yabu.
You've informed Lord Taranaga of my arrival?
Of course.
Good.
The news you brought us would interest him greatly.
Yes, I saw a carrier pigeon circle and fly north.
I have that service now.
Yabu did not add that Jozen's pigeon had also been observed, or that falcons had intercepted it near the mountains, or that the message had been decoded. At Anjiro, all true as reported. Yabu, Naga, Omi, and Barbarian here.
I will leave tomorrow with your permission, after the attack. You'll give me fresh horses. I must not keep Lord Taranaga waiting. I look forward to seeing him. So does my master, at Osaka. I hope you'll accompany him, Naga-san.
If I'm ordered there, I will be there.
Naga kept his eyes lowered, but he was burning with suppressed fury. Jozen left and walked with his guards up the hill to his camp. He rearranged the sentries and ordered his men to sleep and got into his small brush lean-to that they had constructed against the coming rain. By candlelight, under a mosquito net, he rewrote the previous message on a thin piece of rice paper and added,
the 500 guns are lethal. Mass surprise gun attacks planned. Full report already sent with Masumoto.
Then he dated it and doused the candle. In the darkness, he slipped out of his net, removed one of the pigeons from the panniers, and placed the message in the tiny container on its foot. Then he stealthily made his way to one of his men and handed him the bird.
Take it out, into the brush, he whispered. Hide it somewhere where it can roost safely until dawn, as far away as you can. But be careful. There are eyes all around. If you're intercepted, say I told you to patrol, but hide the pigeon first.
The man slid away as silently as a cockroach. Pleased with himself, Jozen looked toward the village below. There were lights on in the fortress and on the opposite slope, in the house that he knew to be Omi's. There were a few also in the house just below, the one presently occupied by the barbarian.
That whelp Naga's right,
Jozen thought, waving his hand at a mosquito.
The barbarians, a filthy plague.
Good night, Hujiko-san.
Good night, Anjin-san.
The shoji closed behind her. Blackthorn took off his kimono and loincloth and put on the lighter sleeping kimono, got under the mosquito net, and lay down. He blew out the candle. Deep darkness enveloped him. The house was quiet now. The small shutters were closed, and he could hear the surf. Clouds obscured the moon. The wine and laughter had made him drowsy and euphoric, and he listened to the surf and felt himself drifting with it, his mind fogged. Occasionally, a dog barked in the village below.
I should get a dog, he thought, remembering his own bull terrier at home. Wonder if he's still alive.
Grog was his name, but Tudor, his son, always called him Og Og.
Ah, Tudor, laddie. It's been such a long time. Wish I could see you all. Even write a letter and send it home. Let's see, he thought. How would I begin? My darlings, this is the first letter I've been able to send home since we made landfall in Japan. Things are well now that I know how to live according to their ways. The food is terrible, but tonight I had pheasant, and soon I'll get my ship back again. Where to start my story? Today I'm like a feudal lord in this strange country. I have a house, a horse, 8 servants, a housekeeper, my own barber, and my own interpreter. I'm clean-shaven now, and shave every day. The steel razors they have here must certainly be the best in the world. My salary's huge, enough to feed 250 Japan families for 1 year. In England, that'd be the equivalent of almost 1,000 golden guineas a year. 10 times my salary from the Dutch company.
The shoji began to open. His hand sought his pistol under the pillow, and he read it, dragging himself back. Then he caught the almost imperceptible rustle of silk and a waft of perfume.
Anjin-san.
A thread of whisper filled with promise.
Hai?
He asked as softly, peering into the darkness, unable to see clearly. Footsteps came closer. There was the sound of her kneeling and the net was pulled aside, and she joined him inside the enclosing net. She took his hand and lifted it to her breast, then to her lips.
Mariko-san?
At once, fingers reached up in the darkness and touched his lips, cautioning silence. He nodded, understanding the awful risk they were taking. He held her tiny wrist and brushed it with his lips. In the pitch black, his other hand sought and caressed her face. She kissed his fingers, one by one. Her hair was loose and waist-length now. His hands traveled her. The lovely feel of silk. Nothing beneath. Her taste was sweet. His tongue touched her teeth, then rimmed her ears, discovering her. She loosened his robe and let hers fall aside, her breathing more languorous now. She pushed closer, nestling, and pulled the covering over their heads. Then she began to love him with hands and with lips, with more tenderness and seeking and knowledge than he had ever known. Chapter 33. Blackthorn awoke at dawn, alone. At first he was sure he had been dreaming, but her perfume still lingered, and he knew that it had not been a dream. A discreet knock.
Hai? Ohayo, Anjin-san. Gomen nasai.
A maid opened the shoji for Hujiko, then carried in the tray with cha and a bowl of rice gruel and sweet rice cakes.
Ohayo, Hujiko-san. Domo. He said, thanking her.
She always came with his first meal personally, opened the net and waited while he ate, and the maid laid out a fresh kimono and tabi and loincloth. He sipped the cha, wondering if Hujiko knew about last night. Her face gave nothing away.
Ikaga desu ka?
How are you? Blackthorn asked.
Okaga-sama, taking heed this, Anjin-san. Anata wa?
Very well, thank you. And you? The maid took out his fresh clothes from the concealed cupboard that melted neatly into the rest of the paper-latticed room, then left them alone.
Anata wa yoku nemutu ka?
Did you sleep well?
Hai, Anjin-san. Arigato gozaimashita.
She smiled, put her hand to her head, pretending pain, mimed being drunk and sleeping like a stone.
Anata wa?
Watashi wa yoku nemuru.
I slept very well. She corrected him.
Watashi wa yoku nemuta.
Domo, watashi wa yoku nemuta.
Yoi, tain yoi.
Good, very good. Then from the corridor, he heard Mariko call out,
Hujiko-san? Hai, Mariko-san?
Hujiko went to the shoji and opened it a crack. He could not see Mariko, and he did not understand what they were saying.
I hope no one knows, he thought. I pray it is secret, just between us. Perhaps it would be better if it had been a dream. He began to dress. Ujiko came back and knelt to do up the catches on the tabi. Mariko-san, Nanja?
Nanemo, Anjin-san,
she replied. It was nothing important. She went to the tokonoma, the alcove with its hanging scroll and flower arrangement, where his swords were always put. She gave them to him. He stuck them in his belt. The swords no longer felt ridiculous to him, though he wished that he could wear them less self-consciously. She had told him that her father had been granted the swords for bravery after a particularly bloody battle in the far north of Korea, 7 years ago during the first invasion. The Japanese armies had ripped through the kingdom, victorious, slashing north. Then, when they were near the Yalu River, the Chinese hordes had abruptly poured across the border to join battle with the Japanese armies, and through the weight of their incredible numbers had routed them. Ujiko's father had been part of the rearguard that had covered the retreat back to the mountains north of Seoul, where they had turned and fought the battle to a stalemate. This and the second campaign had been the costliest military expedition ever undertaken. When the Taiko had died last year, Torunaga, on behalf of the Council of Regents, had at once ordered the remnants of their armies home, to the great relief of the vast majority of daimyos, who detested the Korean campaign. Blackthorn walked out to the veranda. He stepped into his thongs and nodded to his servants, who had been assembled in a neat line to bow him off, as was custom. It was a drab day. The sky was overcast, and a warm wet wind came off the sea. The stepping stones that were set into the gravel of the path were wet with the rain that had fallen in the night. Beyond the gate were the horses and his 10 samurai outriders. And Mariko. She was already mounted and wore a pale yellow mantle over pale green silk trousers, a wide-brimmed hat and veil held with yellow ribbons, and gloves. A rain parasol was ready in its saddle sheath.
Ohayo, he said formally. Ohayo, Mariko-san.
Ohayo, Anjin-san. Ikaga desu ka?
Okaga-sama de genki desu. Anata wa?
She smiled.
Yoi, arigato. Kozaimashita?
She gave not the faintest hint that anything was different between them. But he expected none, not in public, knowing how dangerous the situation was. Her perfume came over him, and he would have liked to kiss her here, in front of everyone.
Ikimasho,
he said, and swung into the saddle, motioning the samurai to ride off ahead. He walked his horse leisurely, and Mariko fell into place beside him. When they were alone, he relaxed. Mariko?
Hai?
Then he said in Latin, Thou art beautiful, and I love thee.
I thank thee, but so much wine last night makes my head to feel not beautiful today, not in truth, and love is a Christian word.
Thou art beautiful and Christian, and wine could not touch thee.
Thank thee for the lie, Anjin-san. Yes. Thank thee?
No, I should thank thee.
Oh, why?
Never why, no why. I thank thee sincerely.
If wine and meat make thee so warm and fine and gallant, she said, then I must tell thy consort to move the heaven and the earth to obtain them for thee every evening.
Yes, I would have everything the same, always.
Thou art untoward happy today, she said. Good, very good. But why? Why truly?
Because of thee. Thou knowest why.
I know nothing, Anjin-san.
Nothing? He teased.
Nothing.
He was taken aback. They were quite alone and safe.
Why doth nothing take the heart out of thy smile?
She asked.
Stupidity. Absolute stupidity. I forgot that it is most wise to be cautious. It is only that we were alone, and I wanted to speak of it, and in truth, to say more.
Thou speakest in riddles. I do not understand thee.
He was nonplussed again.
Thou dost not wish to talk about it? At all?
About what, Anjin-san?
What passed in the night, then?
I passed thy door in the night when my maid, Koi, was with thee.
What?
We, your consort and I, we thought she would be a pleasing gift for thee. She pleased thee, did she not?
Blackthorn was trying to recover. Mariko's maid was her size, but younger, and never so fair, and never so pretty. And yes, it was pitch dark, and yes, his head was fogged with wine. But no, it was not the maid.
That's not possible, he said in Portuguese.
What's not possible, senor?
She asked in the same language. He reverted to Latin again, as the outriders were not far away, the wind blowing in their direction.
Please do not joke with me. No one can hear. I know a presence and a perfume.
Thou thinkest it was me? Oh, it was not, Anjin-san. I would be honored, but I could never possibly, however much I might want. Oh, no, Anjin-san. It was not me, but Koi, my maid. I would be honored, but I belong to another, even though he's dead.
Yes, but it wasn't your maid.
He bit back his anger.
But leave it as thou desirest.
It was my maid, Anjin-san, she said placatingly. We anointed her with my perfume and instructed her. No words, only touch. We never thought for a moment thou wouldst consider her to be me. This was not to trick thee, but for thine ease, knowing that discussing things of the pillow still embarrasses thee.
She was looking at him with wide, innocent eyes.
She pleasured thee, Anjin-san. Thou pleasured her.
A joke concerning things of great importance is sometimes without humor.
Things of great import will always be treated with great import. But a maid in the night with a man is without import.
I do not consider thee without import.
I thank thee. I say that equally. But a maid in the night with a man is private and without import. It is a gift from her to him, and sometimes from him to her. Nothing more.
Never?
Sometimes. But this private pillow matter does not have this vast seriousness of thine.
Never?
Only when the woman and man join together against the law. In this land.
He reined in, finally comprehending the reason for her denial.
I apologize, he said. Yes. Thou art right, and I most very wrong. I should never have spoken. I apologize.
Why apologize? For what? Tell me, Anjin-san, was this girl wearing a crucifix?
No.
I always wear it. Always.
A crucifix can be taken off, he said automatically in Portuguese. That proves nothing. It could be loaned like a perfume.
Tell me a last truth. Did you really see the girl? Really see her?
Of course. But let us forget I ever...
The night was very dark, the moon overcast. Please, the truth, Anjin-san. Think. Did you really see the girl?
Of course I saw her, he thought indignantly. God damn it, think truly. You didn't see her. Your head was fogged. She could have been the maid, but you knew it was Mariko, because you wanted Mariko, and saw only Mariko in your head, believing that Mariko would want you equally. You're a fool. A goddamn fool. In truth, no. In truth, I should really apologize, he said. How do I apologize?
There's no need to apologize, Anjin-san, she replied calmly. I've told you many times a man never apologizes, even when he's wrong. You were not wrong.
Her eyes teased him now.
My maid needs no apology.
Thank you, he said, laughing. You make me feel less of a fool.
The years flee from you when you laugh. The so serious Anjin-san becomes a boy again.
My father told me I was born old.
Were you?
He thought so.
What's he like?
He was a fine man, a shipowner, a captain. The Spanish killed him at a place called Antwerp, when they put that city to the sword. They burned his ship,
I was 6, but I remember him as a big, tall, good-natured man with golden hair. My older brother, Arthur, he was just 8. We had bad times then, Mariko-san.
Why? Please tell me. Please?
It's all very ordinary. Every penny of money was tied into the ship, and that was lost. And well, not long after that, my sister died. She starved to death, really. There was famine in 71, and plague again.
We have plague sometimes. The smallpox. You were many in your family?
3 of us, he said, glad to talk to take away the other hurt. Willia, my sister, she was 9 when she died. Arthur, he was next. He wanted to be an artist, a sculptor, but he had to become an apprentice stonemason to help support us. He was killed in the Armada. He was 25, poor fool. He just joined a ship, untrained. Such a waste. I'm the last of the Blackthorns. Arthur's wife and daughter live with my wife and kids now. My mother's still alive, and so's old Granny Jacoba. She's 75, and hard as a piece of English oak, though she was Irish. At least they were alive when I left more than 2 years ago. The ache was coming back. I'll think about them when I start for home, he promised himself, but not until then. There'll be a storm tomorrow, he said, watching the sea. A strong one, Mariko-san. Then in 3 days, we'll have fair weather.
This is the season of squalls. Mostly it's overcast and rain-filled. When the rains stop, it becomes very humid. Then begin the typhoons.
I wish I were at sea again, he was thinking. Was I ever at sea? Was the ship real? What's reality? Mariko or the maid?
You don't laugh very much, do you, Anjin-san?
I've been seafaring too long. Seamen are always serious. We've learned to watch the sea. We're always watching and waiting for disaster. Take your eyes off the sea for a second, and she'll grasp your ship and make her matchwood.
I'm afraid of the sea, she said.
So am I. An old fisherman told me once, the man who's not afraid of the sea will soon be drowned, for he'll go out on a day he shouldn't. But we be afraid of the sea, so we be only drowned now and again.
He looked at her. Mariko-san?
Yes?
A few minutes ago you'd convinced me that... Well, let's say I was convinced. Now I'm not. What's the truth? The hunter. I must know.
Is Arta here with? Of course it was the maid.
This maid. Can I ask for her whenever I want?
Of course. A wise man would not.
Because I might be disappointed. Next time?
Possibly.
I find it difficult to possess a maid and lose a maid. Difficult to say nothing.
Pillowing is a pleasure. Of the body. Nothing has to be said.
But how do I tell a maid that she is beautiful? That I love her? That she filled me with ecstasy?
It isn't seemly to love a maid this way. Not here, Anjin-san. That passion's not even for a wife or a consort.
Her eyes crinkled suddenly.
But only towards someone like Kiku-san, the courtesan, who is so beautiful and merits this.
Where can I find this girl?
In the village. It would be my honor to act as your go-between.
By Christ, I think you mean it.
Of course. A man needs passions of all kinds. This lady is worthy of romance, if you can afford her.
What does that mean?
She would be very expensive.
You don't buy love. That type's worth nothing. Love is without price.
She smiled. Pillowing always has its price. Always. Not necessarily money, Anjin-san. But a man pays, always, for pillowing in one way or in another. True love, we call it duty, is of soul to soul, and needs no such expression. No physical expression, except perhaps the gift of death.
You're wrong. I wish I could show you the world as it is.
I know the world as it is, and as it will be forever. You want this contemptible maid again?
Yes. You know I want.
Mariko laughed gaily. Then she will be sent to you. At sunset. We will escort her, Hujiko and I.
God damn it. I think you would too.
He laughed with her. Oh, Anjin-san, it is good to see you laugh. Since you came back to Anjiro, you have gone through a great change. A very great change.
No, not so much. But last night I dreamed a dream. That dream was perfection.
God is perfection. And sometimes so is a sunset, or moonrise, or the first crocus of the year.
I don't understand you at all.
She turned back the veil on her hat and looked directly at him. Once another man said to me, I don't understand you at all. And my husband said, Your pardon, Lord, but no man can understand her. Her father doesn't understand her, neither do the gods, nor her barbarian god. Not even her mother understands her.
That was Torunaga? Lord Torunaga?
Oh no, Anjin-san. That was the Taiko. Lord Torunaga understands me. He understands everything.
Even me?
Very much you.
You're sure of that, aren't you?
Yes. Oh, very yes.
Will he win the war?
Yes.
I'm his favored vassal?
Yes.
Will he take my navy?
Yes.
When will I get my ship back?
You won't.
Why?
Her gravity vanished. Because you'll have your maid in Anjiro, and you'll be pillowing so much, you'll have no energy to leave, even on your hands and knees, when she begs you to go aboard your ship, and when Lord Torunaga asks you to go aboard and to leave us all.
There you go again. One moment so serious, the next not.
That's only to answer you, Anjin-san, and to put certain things in a correct place. Ah, but before you leave us, you should see the Lady Kiku. She's worthy of a great passion. She's so beautiful and talented. For her, you would have to be extraordinary.
I'm tempted to accept that challenge.
I challenge no one. But if you're prepared to be samurai and not foreigner, if you're prepared to treat pillowing for what it is, then I would be honored to act as go-between.
What does that mean?
When you're in good humor, when you're ready for very special amusement, ask your consort to ask me.
Why Hujiko-san?
Because it's your consort's duty to see that you are pleasured. It is our custom to make life simple. We admire simplicity, so men and women can take pillowing for what it is. An important part of life, certainly. But between a man and a woman, there are more vital things. Humility, for one. Respect? Duty? Even this love of yours. Hujiko loves you.
No, she doesn't.
She will give you her life. What more is there to give?
At length he took his eyes off her and looked at the sea. The waves were cresting the shore as the wind freshened. He turned back to her.
Then nothing is to be said, he asked. Between us?
Nothing. That is wise.
And if I don't agree?
You must agree. You are here. This is your home.
The attacking 500 galloped over the lip of the hill in a haphazard pack, down onto the rock-strewn valley floor, where the 2,000 defenders were drawn up in a battle array. Each rider wore a musket slung on his back and a belt with pouches for bullets, flints, and a powder horn. Like most samurai, their clothes were a motley collection of kimonos and rags, but their weapons always the best that each could afford. Only Torunaga and Ishido, copying him, insisted that their troops be uniformed and punctilious in their dress. All other daimyos considered such outward extravagance a foolish squandering of money, an unnecessary innovation. Even Blackthorn had agreed. The armies of Europe were never uniformed. What king could afford that, except for a personal guard?
He was standing on a rise with Yabu and his aides, Chosen and all his men, and Mariko. This was the first full-scale rehearsal of an attack. He waited uneasily. Yabu was uncommonly tense, and Omi and Naga both had been touchy, almost to the point of belligerence. Particularly Naga.
"What's the matter with everyone?"
he had asked Mariko.
"Perhaps they wish to do well in front of their lord and his guest."
"Is he a daimyo too?"
"No, but important. One of Lord Ishido's generals. It would be good if everything were perfect today."
"I wish I'd been told there was to be a rehearsal."
"What would that have accomplished? Everything you could do, you have done."
"Yes," Blackthorn thought, as he watched the 500. "But they're nowhere near ready yet.
Surely Yabu knows that too. Everyone does. So if there is a disaster, well, that's karma,"
he told himself with more confidence, and found consolation in that thought. The attackers gathered speed, and the defenders stood waiting under the banners of their captains, jeering at the enemy, as they would normally do, strung out in loose formation, three or four men deep. Soon the attackers would dismount out of arrow range. Then the most valiant warriors on both sides would truculently strut to the fore to throw down the gauntlet, proclaiming their own lineage and superiority with the most obvious of insults. Single-armed conflicts would begin, gradually increasing in numbers, until one commander would order a general attack, and then it was every man for himself. Usually the greater number defeated the smaller, then the reserves would be brought up and committed, and again the melee, until the morale of one side broke, and the few cowards that retreated would soon be joined by the many, and a rout would ensue. Treachery was not unusual. Sometimes whole regiments, following their master's orders, would switch sides to be welcomed as allies, always welcomed, but never trusted. Sometimes the defeated commanders would flee to regroup to fight again. Sometimes they would stay and fight to the death. Sometimes they would commit seppuku with ceremony. Rarely were they captured. Some offered their services to the victors. Sometimes this was accepted, but most times refused. Death was the lot of the vanquished, quick for the brave and shame-filled for the cowardly. And this was the historic pattern of all skirmishes in this land, even at great battles, soldiers here the same as everywhere, except that here they were more ferocious, and many, many more were prepared to die for their masters than anywhere else on earth. The thunder of the hooves echoed in the valley.
"Where's the attack, Commander? Where's Omi-san?" Chosen asked.
"Among the men, be patient," Yabu replied.
"But where's his standard? And why isn't he wearing battle armor and plumes? Where's the commander's standard? They're just like a bunch of filthy, no-good bandits."
"Be patient. All officers are ordered to remain nondescript. I told you. And please, don't forget we're pretending a battle is raging. That this is part of a big battle, with reserves and arm..."
Chosen burst out.
"Where are their swords? None of them are wearing swords. Samurai without swords? They'd be massacred."
"Be patient."
Now the attackers were dismounting. The first warriors strode out from the defending ranks to show their valor. An equal number began to measure up against them. Then, suddenly, the ungainly mass of attackers rushed into five tight-disciplined phalanxes, each with four ranks of 25 men, three phalanxes ahead and two in reserve, 40 paces back. As one, they charged the enemy. In range, they shuddered to a stop on command, and the front ranks fired an ear-shattering salvo in unison. Screams and men dying. Chosen and his men ducked reflexively, then watched appalled as the front ranks knelt and began to reload, and the second ranks fired over them, with the third and fourth ranks following the same pattern. At each salvo, more defenders fell, and the valley was filled with shouts and screams and confusion.
"You're killing your own men!"
Chosen shouted above the uproar.
"It's blank ammunition, not real. They're all acting, but imagine it's a real attack, with real bullets. Watch."
Now the defenders recovered from the initial shock. They regrouped and whirled back to a frontal attack. But by this time, the front ranks had reloaded, and on command, fired another salvo from a kneeling position. Then the second rank fired standing, immediately kneeling to reload. Then the third and the fourth, as before. And though many musketeers were slow and their ranks ragged, it was easy to imagine the awful decimation trained men would cause. The counterattack faltered, then broke apart, and the defenders retreated in pretended confusion, back up the rise to stop just below the observers. Many dead littered the ground. Josen and his men were shaken.
Those guns would break any line!
Wait, the battle's not over.
Again the defenders reformed, and now their commanders exhorted them to victory, committed the reserves, and ordered the final general attack. The samurai rushed down the hill, emitting their terrible battle cries, to fall on the enemy.
Now they'll be stamped into the ground,
Josen said, caught up, like all of them, in the realism of this mock battle. And he was right. The phalanxes did not hold their ground. They broke and fled before the battle cries of the true samurai, with their swords and spears. And Josen and his men added their shouts of scorn as the regiments hurtled to the kill. The musketeers were fleeing like the garlic eaters, 100 paces, 200 paces, 300. Then, suddenly, on command, the phalanxes regrouped, this time in a V formation. Again the shattering salvos began. The attack faltered, then stopped. But the guns continued. Then they, too, stopped. The game ceased. But all on the rise knew that under actual conditions, the 2,000 would have been slaughtered. Now, in the silence, defenders and attackers began to sort themselves out. The bodies got up, weapons were collected. There was laughter and groaning. Many men limped, and a few were badly hurt.
I congratulate you, Yabu-sama, Josen said, with great sincerity. Now I understand what all of you meant.
The firing was ragged,
Yabu said, inwardly delighted.
It will take months to train them.
Josen shook his head.
I wouldn't like to attack them now, not if they had real ammunition. No army could withstand that punch. No line. The ranks could never stay closed. And then you'd pour ordinary troops and cavalry through the gap and roll up the sides like an old scroll.
He thanked all calmly that he'd had the sense to see one attack.
It was terrible to watch. For a moment, I thought the battle was real.
They were ordered to make it look real. And now you may review my musketeers, if you wish.
Thank you. That would be an honor.
The defenders were streaming off to their camps that sat on the far hillside. The 500 musketeers waited below, near the path that went over the rise and slid down to the village. They were forming into their companies, Omi and Naga in front of them, both wearing swords again.
Yabu-sama?
Yes, Anjin-san?
Good, no?
Yes, good.
Thank you, Yabu-sama. I please.
Mariko corrected him automatically.
I am pleased.
Ah, so sorry. I am pleased.
Josen took Yabu aside.
This is all out of the Anjin-san's head?
No,
Yabu lied.
But it's the way barbarians fight. He's just training the men to load and to fire.
Why not do as Naga-san advised? You've the barbarians' knowledge now. Why risk it spreading? He is a plague. Very dangerous, Yabu-sama. Naga-san was right. It's true. Peasants could fight this way, easily. Get rid of the barbarian now.
If Lord Ishido wants his head, he has only to ask.
I ask it, now.
Again the truculence.
I speak with his voice.
I'll consider it, Josen-san.
And also in his name, I ask that all guns be withdrawn from those troops at once.
Yabu frowned, then turned his attention to the companies. They were approaching up the hill, their straight, disciplined ranks faintly ludicrous, as always, only because such order was unusual.
50 paces away, they halted. Omi and Naga came on alone and saluted.
It was all right for a first exercise,
Yabu said.
Thank you, sir,
Omi replied. He was limping slightly, and his face was dirty, bruised, and powder-marked. Chosen said,
Your troops would have to carry swords in a real battle, Yabu-sama, eh? A samurai must carry swords. Eventually they'd run out of ammunition, eh?
Swords will be in their way, in charge and retreat. Oh, they'll wear them as usual to maintain surprise, but just before the first charge, they'll get rid of them.
Samurai will always need swords, in a real battle. Even so, I'm glad you'll never have to use this attack force, or...
Josen was going to add,
or this filthy, treacherous method of war.
Instead, he said,
or we'll all have to give our swords away. Perhaps we will, Josen-san, when we go to war. You'd give up your Murasama blade, or even Toranaga's gift?
To win a battle, yes. Otherwise, no.
Then you might have to run very fast to save your fruit when your musket jammed or your powder got wet.
Josen laughed at his own sally. Yabu did not.
Omi-san, show him,
he ordered. At once Omi gave an order. His men slipped out the short sheathed bayonet sword that hung almost unnoticed from the back of their belts and snapped it into a socket on the muzzle of their muskets.
Charge!
Instantly, the samurai charged with their battle cry.
Kashigi!
The forest of naked steel stopped a pace away from them. Chosen and his men were laughing nervously from the sudden, unexpected ferocity.
Good! Very good! Chosen said.
He reached out and touched one of the bayonets. It was extremely sharp.
Perhaps you're right, Yabu-sama. Let's hope it's never put to the test. Omi-san,
Yabu called.
Form them up. Josen-san's going to review them. Then go back to camp.
Mariko-san, Anjin-san, you follow me.
He strode down the rise through the ranks, his aides, Blackthorn and Mariko, following.
Form up at the path. Replace bayonets.
Half the men obeyed at once, turned about, and walked down the slope again. Naga and his 250 samurai remained where they were, bayonets still threatening. Josen bristled.
What's going on? I consider your insults intolerable,
Naga said venomously.
That's nonsense. I haven't insulted you or anyone. Your bayonets insult my position. Yabu-sama!
Yabu turned back. Now he was on the other side of the Toranaga contingent.
Naga-san, he called out coldly, what's the meaning of this? I cannot forgive this man's insults to my father, or to me. He's protected. You cannot touch him now. He's under the cipher of the regents. Your pardon, Yabu-sama, but this is between Josen-san and myself. No, you are under my orders. I order you to tell your men to return to camp.
Not a man moved. The rain began.
Your pardon, Yabu-san. Please forgive me. But this is between him and me. And whatever happens, I absolve you of responsibility for my action and those of my men.
Behind Naga, one of Josen's men drew his sword and lunged for Naga's unprotected back. A volley of 20 muskets blew off his head at once. These 20 men knelt and began to reload. The second rank readied.
Who ordered live ammunition?
Yabu demanded.
I did. I, Yoshinaga no Toranaga. Naga-san, I order you to let Nabara Josen and his men go free. You are ordered to your quarters until I can consult Lord Toranaga about your insubordination. Of course you will inform Lord Toranaga, and Kama is Kama. But I regret, Lord Yabu, that first this man must die. All of them must die. Today.
Josen shrieked.
I'm protected by the regents. You'll gain nothing by killing me.
I regain my honor, eh? Naga said. I repay your sneers at my father and your insults to me. But you would have had to die anyway, eh? I could not have been more clear last night. Now you've seen an attack. I cannot risk Ishido learning all this.
His hand waved at the battlefield.
This horror! He already knows!
Josen blurted out, blessing his foresight of the previous evening.
He knows already! I sent a message by pigeon secretly at dawn. You gain nothing by killing me, Naga-san!
Naga motioned to one of his men, an old samurai, who came forward and threw the strangled pigeon at Josen's feet. Then a man's severed head was also cast upon the ground, the head of the samurai, Masumoto, sent yesterday by Josen with the scroll. His eyes were still open, the lips drawn back in a hate-filled grimace. The head began to roll. It tumbled through the ranks until it came to rest against a rock. A moan broke from Josen's lips. Naga and all his men laughed. Even Yabu smiled. Another of Josen's samurai leaped for Naga. 20 muskets blasted him, and the man next to him, who had not moved, also fell in agony, mortally wounded. The laughter ceased. Omi said, "Shall I order my men to attack, sir?" It had been so easy to maneuver Naga. Yabu wiped the rain off his face.
"No, that would achieve nothing. Josen-san and his men are already dead, whatever I do. That's his karma, as Naga-san has his."
"Naga-san," he called out, "for the last time, I order you to let them all go. Please excuse me, but I must refuse."
"Very well. When it is finished, report to me."
"Yes, there should be an official witness, Yabu-sama, for Lord Toranaga and for Lord Ishido."
"Omi-san, you will stay. You will sign the death certification and make out the dispatch. Naga-san and I will countersign it."
Naga pointed at Blackthorn.
"Let him stay too, also as witness. He's responsible for their deaths. He should witness them."
"Anjin-san, go up there, to Naga-san. Do you understand?"
"Yes, Yabu-san, I understand. But why, please?"
"To be a witness."
"Sorry, don't understand."
"Mariko-san, explain witness to him, that he's to witness what's going to happen. Then you follow me."
Hiding his vast satisfaction, Yabu turned and left. Josen shrieked.
"Yabu-sama! Please! Yabu-sama!"
Blackthorn watched. When it was finished, he went home. There was silence in his house and a pall over the village. A bath did not make him feel clean. Sake did not take away the foulness from his mouth. Incense did not unclog the stench from his nostrils. Later, Yabu sent for him. The attack was dissected, moment by moment. Omi and Naga were there with Mariko. Naga, as always, cold, listening, rarely commenting, still second in command. None of them seemed touched by what had happened. They worked till after sunset. Yabu ordered the tempo of training stepped up. A second 500 was to be formed at once. In 1 week, another. Blackthorn walked home alone, and ate alone, beset by his ghastly discovery. That they had no sense of sin. They were all conscienceless. Even Mariko. That night, he couldn't sleep. He left the house, the wind tugging at him. Gusts were frothing the waves. A stronger squall sent debris clattering against a village hovel. Dogs howled at the sky and foraged. The rice-thatched roofs moved like living things. Shutters were banging, and men and women, silent wraiths, fought them closed and barred them. The tide came in heavily. All the fishing boats had been hauled to safety much farther up the beach than usual. Everything was battened down.
He walked the shore, then returned to his house, leaning against the press of the